Let me thank you for coming. I didn't anticipate much of an audience because I didn't anticipate that universities would be that interesting. I thought I'd be speaking to a few old friends, but then I thought, well, I'd best describe them differently. Young friends who I've known for a long time. thank you very much for coming. Today I'm going to be deliberately provocative, and unapologetically so, because I think, after all, this is the point of the reimagining that the Festival of Ideas promotes. And I was intrigued by the exclamation mark that follows the word imagine, and it rather demands, I think, that you be provocative. The public university is dead. It's been a slow and lingering death, excruciatingly painful for those forced to observe it. And its corpse lies lifeless in every senior manager's meeting, in every classroom and tutorial venue, in every staff office, in every boarded up common room, and in every closed bookshop. Its death has not been the responsibility of any one person, nor any one government. Its degradation began long ago with the neoliberalisation and marketisation of higher education, as much a Thatcher and a Blair process as a coalition one. The most surprising thing about this demise is that those primarily responsible for the patient's care were like vultures, unable to contain their enthusiasm at its end. Vice-chancellors in particular were supine. They failed to discharge their duty of care. They have, in effect, by their lack of protection, raked over the ruins of the corpse, eager for advantage, eager for benefit, like a family fighting over a well. Universities have lost their public funding. They have lost their public function. But here today, I want to argue that we can reclaim the new sense of a public university. Now, if you like alliterations, as I do, the public university has lost funding and function, but must now find fidelity. Fidelity means honesty, loyalty, faithfulness, reliability, dependability, commitment, responsibility, trustworthiness. These are words that describe moral virtues, moral purpose. In making public universities business-like, universities have been turned into businesses, where profit and loss, market and product differentiation, unique selling points, and value for money have destroyed their sense of moral virtue and moral purpose. If their value is only their contribution to the economy, then universities have no value. Making money without a sense of what use you put the money to is not value. Value is worth. Value is esteem. Value is social good. By turning universities into businesses, falling down on the black side of the financial bottom line becomes their chief aim. Means replace ends, and the goal of universities becomes self-reproduction. Surviving as a business becomes the end itself. And hence we get what is called the modern administrative university. Universities run by managers in order to keep managers in post, to keep universities in business. The administrative university is bursar-led, not academic-led. Public value, moral virtue, moral purpose do not enter into their discourse. The language of business is a measure of just how much business is now their business. As Danny Dorling noted wryly in a piece recently in the Times Higher Education, money changes everything. Students have been transformed into fee carriers, customers carrying cash. English universities spent £36 million on student marketing in 2012-13. A 33% increase on 2010-11. And as an aside remark, it's interesting to note a fourfold increase in unconditional offers being made to students in 2014. Made to candidates, that is, who do not yet even have their exam results. So eager are universities to benefit from fee income. The financial incentives for universities to take on more and more students have never been greater. And this will be followed inevitably by the greatest level of debt experienced by young adults in the UK's history. But today I wish to reclaim the public value and the moral virtue of the university. But mine is not a lament for a lost world of public finance and public function. Privatisation has wreaked its terrible havoc, and the public university is dead. Dead as dead. If I can quote Monty Python's dead parrot sketch, he's a stiff. Bereft of life, he rests in peace. If you hadn't nailed him to the perch, he'd be pushing up the daisies. His metabolic processes are now history. He's off the twig. He's kicked the bucket. He's shuffled off his mortal coil, run down the curtain and joined the bleeding choir invisible. This is an ex-parrot. We have run down the curtain on the public university. Neoliberalisation, which sang its death knell as the curtain rolled, is irreversible, irresistible. We can lament this. We can rail against the marketeers. We can urge a return to public funding and public finance. I fear, though, that people of my generation are witnesses to a fateful end. A death beyond words, but a death nonetheless. And I am no Canute. I'm not going to try to resist the inevitable. The ebb tide always flows, if I can invoke the righteous brothers. The point for me then is that we now rebuild. We reshape, we refashion. Public universities began as primarily medieval institutions created by the church. Medieval institutions are no longer fit for purpose in a global, late modern world. And so universities need to change to equip themselves for the 21st century. I'm a sociologist. I know that change is necessary. I know that change is inevitable. I know also that change can be resisted. Fellow academics strike me as amongst the most resistant to change. I think there's an obvious explanation for this. Academics were special for a very long time in retaining under industrialization large amounts of autonomy and control over their time and working conditions. Universities were the last nationalized industry. This is now gone, as much behind us as British Rail or, sadly, the NHS. And in resisting some changes, many academics have a tendency to resist all. And the rise of uncivility, the rise of discourtesy in the management of the modern university is paralleled by the rise in the tendency of academic staff to whine. But I think that universities should constantly be rethinking their structures and practices, rethinking their roles and their procedures, because many of these are still rooted in the 15th century. And today I'm going to be talking about merely one of these changes, the pressing need for universities to recapture their soul. I couch this deliberately in ecclesiastical language, evocative of our medieval past. I'm not being playfully ironic in doing so. We need to take back from the marketeers a moral dimension, a moral dimension that I find in the idea of fidelity. So rediscovering their moral purpose would truly make the new public university relevant to the 21st century rather than the 15th. So in typical lecturing fire style, if I can be permitted to summarise my argument, it is that the once revered ancient institution of the public university has changed beyond recognition. We need to turn this loss into an opportunity. Universities need to recapture and reshape their global mission for the 21st century to make themselves truly public again. This requires them to redefine their public value, to make themselves relevant to the complex problems threatening the future of humankind. And quite frankly, this requires more change to universities, not less. Broader visions, not narrower ones. Greater ambitions, not smaller ones. And it requires universities to be outward facing with a renewed sense of public purpose and civic engagement. I have told three vice chancellors in two different institutions, although I should add here, of course, only when asked, that they should do more than aim for their institution to climb to the top of the tree. They should move it to other parts of the forest where there are taller trees. The problem, of course, is how to get there. Let me suggest one way. What the re-envisioned and reimagined public university needs is to practice fidelity. Fidelity towards a public mission. Being faithful to making a difference to people's lives, locally and globally. Being reliable and trustworthy in seeing through this mission, despite the financial bottom line or the demands of the marketeers. And this is what I consider to be the new public university's moral virtue, its moral value, its devotion, if you like. It's this that gives it back its soul. And I will expand, don't worry. But first, let me head off complaints from the bursars or the marketeers in the room. I said I wasn't Canute, neither am I an ostrich head in the sand. Universities need money. Am I naive, though, in suggesting that they are better equipped to make money when they are perceived as places worth supporting? Places in which people want to invest. Invest their time, invest their future, and hopefully invest their money. And when people recognize them as institutions promoting the social good rather than just promoting themselves. Nothing turns supporters off more than when universities almost prostitute themselves by appearing to be places where money matters more than having some higher moral purpose to which the money is put. Am I naive in thinking that if universities took care of their moral virtue and moral purpose, the financial bottom line may well take care of itself? The way for public universities to make themselves financially sustainable, in my view, is for them to show fidelity. That is to demonstrate loyalty to local and global communities, show commitment to social responsibility, show dependability in engaging the fundamental global challenges that threaten the future of humankind, and show dedication to good citizenship locally and globally. Fidelity will make universities trustworthy institutions again. Trustworthy institutions that local communities feel they have some ownership of, some commitment towards, some loyalty to, rather than a posh place that exists on the hill. Fidelity, you see, tends to be one of those moral virtues that is reciprocal. It multiplies the more you practice it. And in working on in global arenas, as universities must these days, this allows reciprocation to be global too. So this means that to be genuinely public, in this sense, The university should operate by four key principles over and above the taken for granted commitment to excellence in learning, education, and research. And I suggest to you that these principles are more important than any strapline or any fine-sounding PR spin. These are the four key principles that I think would reshape, rethink the new public university. Universities should have an obligation to the betterment and improvement of society. Universities should practice an ethic of responsibility. Universities should promote the advancement of morally constituted knowledge. Morally constituted knowledge in both teaching and research. Knowledge, that is, in which objective science is directed towards the promotion of the social good. And universities, finally, should commit themselves to helping understand the global challenges that risk the future of humankind and which threaten the social good. I ask you to note that these principles require universities to become reconciled to a fundamental change in their self-image. Of course they remain places of learning. Of course they remain inherently scientific. But they should now also see themselves as inherently moral and political at the same time. Because by practicing fidelity, we get universities that are committed to the collection and the interrogation of evidence undistorted by the values they hold, but fundamentally also committed to the objective analysis and amelioration of ethical problems. Universities should address themselves to injustice. They should address themselves to inequality and suffering, to the analysis of the structural processes that promote or inhibit the realization of social betterment, the realization and the meeting of human needs and human wants. Because universities should not practice moral indifference under the guise of being businesslike. So the vital moral purpose and moral virtue of the new public university is to be a civilizing and humanizing mirror. A civilizing and humanizing mirror for societies to see themselves, to learn about themselves, to enable debates and judgments about the social good and the elimination of social suffering. So the new public university would advance teaching and research that is explicitly publicly engaged. Teaching and research that is driven by global society challenges. A university that is capable of scientific and objective practice based on its explicit ethical responsibilities. Now, I am not here talking about impact. Much to the chagrin of my fellow sociologists, I have said before that impact is a sheep in wolves' clothing. Now, I'll repeat that, since it may be hard to get your head around at first hearing. It's a sheep in wolves' clothing. That is to say, impact is not as problematic as it appears. All research should, and all research can, have benefit. The problem with impact, as higher education managers see it, is how reliably to measure it. And I'm not talking today about impact. I'm talking about principles much wider than that. I am referring to universities coming to recognize that they have explicitly ethical and moral responsibilities more than business ones. It is, of course, easy for universities to pay lip service to this rhetoric. Words are easy, but words are never enough. Universities must practice ethical responsibility. They must promote ethical responsibility in staff and students, in porters and professors, in cleaners and clinicians. And it is for this reason that we get more change to universities, as I said earlier, not less. Broader visions, not narrower profit and loss ones. And taller trees to climb, not shrubs. This means, I think, that public universities must themselves reorganize, reconfigure their teaching and research landscapes to facilitate fidelity. Public funding, public function have disappeared, but we must now have public fidelity. By this I mean ethically responsible teaching, ethically responsible research, ethically responsible civic engagement. Where there is fidelity in the commitment to enhancing the social good, where there is devotion to engagement with human betterment and the elimination of harm and want, and where there is honesty in the practice of civic engagement and global citizenship. And this means that disciplines must come out of their professional silos. It means universities must dismantle their ivory towers. The research and teaching landscape should be reconfigured so that we develop public knowledge as much as professional knowledge. This means, I think, that we should facilitate post-disciplinary innovations in teaching and research. The kind of post-disciplinary innovations that are necessary if we are to deal with 21st century problems. Because dealing with these 21st century problems is currently hindered by our essentially medieval academic structure and disciplines. So public universities should transcend the gulf between universities and society. They should encourage an ethos of civic engagement as much as scholarship. So in our teaching and research, we should not so much aim to train minds, but to change minds, because thereby you help them to change society. Now, I could go on. If I went on, I would only be saying more of the same, so let me end. To equip universities for the 21st century, I am suggesting no less than that we reclaim the idea of the moral purpose of the public university. The public university is too important to be left to marketeers, because universities belong to us all. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, John, for a stimulating talk. We've got a number of questions.
I just said John Muir for Vice Chancellor, but his wife just turned and said, "Dead body."
There was a Vice-Chancellor, a couple of Vice-Chancellors ago, that when I gave up being a head of school here for 9 years, wished to make me dean. After 9 years of running the school, I said that that wasn't a greasy pole I wished to climb, and that would still remain the case. I would much rather be on the fringes, whinging about universities rather than running them.
John, can I just ask on a more serious note? You know, while I would fully agree with everything you have said, I just wonder, is it possible?
Well, as I was writing this, I began to worry if I would be an emperor without clothes. The reason for that is because there are many universities in the UK now, never mind globally, but in the UK, that are reconfiguring their teaching and research landscape in precisely the way that I've suggested. Some of these are Russell Group universities, some are post-92 universities. One thinks, for example, in post-92, Glasgow Caledonian. One thinks in terms of Russell Group universities, well, there's Queen's, there's UCL, there's Newcastle, Sheffield, and Nottingham. So I began to worry, my goodness me, am I saying anything new here? But these reconfigurations are more recent, and what I'm trying to do is to argue that there should be a moral purpose to this reconfiguring. The example of UCL demonstrates that if you do reconfigure your research and teaching landscape to reflect global challenges, you are flexible enough to be able to exploit rapidly changing funding initiatives. So that UCL's position in the external funding league rose dramatically to the point where it became, for the very first time, number one in the League of Universities for External Research Earnings. £500 million more than the second on that list. So you might argue that there is a neoliberal, marketized incentive to change the university landscape. I'm arguing let us do this for a moral purpose, because the only way that you can make a university truly public anymore is in terms of the public value it promotes. And I really want to get rid of this business speak, because I think that we can engage and fulfill ethical responsibilities that enable us to couch the reconfiguring in terms of worth, good, and esteem rather than business.
At the outset, let me thank you for a beautiful lecture, beautifully delivered, and with the sort of passion we expect in our best university teachers. So well done on that.
But
I mean, I agree with much of what you say. But one of my concerns about the universities in general at the moment is this drift towards homogeneity. Exactly the kind of business orientation that you're talking about. What you're suggesting could well be homogeneity in the other direction, which I think would be a disaster. I'm all in favour of heterogeneity. My other concern is when you talk about seizing this morality. Whose morality? Are we preaching the morality of the Catholic Church, the morality of Islam?
Yeah.
I would not like to defend what morals we should be teaching, and I'm sure you don't either.
Thank you very much for your question. If I may comment, one of the paradoxes of the neoliberal marketized university that puts so much emphasis upon market differentiation, product differentiation, finding a market niche, one of the paradoxes is that that tends to produce the very homogeneity that you describe. In fact, it makes the market indistinguishable rather than differentiated. Now, I happen to believe that the public university, in my new sense, would be more differentiated than that, because the global challenges that a university might want to use to reshape its landscape would differ depending upon its location, depending upon its expertise. So that in terms of the University of Newcastle, one of their global challenges, for example, is on an ageing population. That wouldn't necessarily be one that other universities would adopt. The global challenges you adopt reflect partly the skills, expertise that the university have, and partly a sense of what is the pressing need. Now, am I pushing a Catholic, religious, or some other moral agenda? I was very careful to describe the ethical responsibility we have in clear ways. An ethical responsibility to the promotion of the social good, to betterment of society and the elimination of harm. Attention as much to the promotion of the social good as to the elimination of want and need. Now, let me suggest to you that those virtues, those values, represent a minimum moral baseline that is shared whether you're Catholic or Protestant, Muslim, atheist, or whatever. Is there any specific moral framework that would perhaps say that we don't want human embitterment, that we don't want to eliminate suffering, that we don't want to eliminate harm and need? So I couch them deliberately in ways that I think make them fairly uncontroversial, no matter what specific set of moral values you may hold. And yes, I do think that it would be wrong for a public university in this new sense to have a set of moral values that identify it exclusively or predominantly with a particular moral authority. But I happen to believe that the promotion of the social good, the elimination of social suffering, are universally recognised as moral precepts.
I wonder if I can use my privilege as chair and interject. In what you said, you've suggested a number of times there's no going back, but I do wonder if there's opportunity to look for inspiration in the past. So the medieval university was founded on the ideal that academics, professors, those who professed knowledge, held knowledge in trust for the population, for the society, for the nation state, and for God. The research university, which was a German invention that not coincidentally emerged at the same time as the social sciences, it had a purpose to find out more, for the betterment of society, and the emergence of the scientific man, or the scientific researcher, is not a kind of neutral figure, is not a lack of values, it's not a lack of morality, but a hard-won set of values, as a bunch of history of science has recently demonstrated. And one thing that hasn't come up, but I think fits in what you just said now, is the idea of the liberal arts college in America and the pragmatist idea of a moral education, and John Dewey's perspective on the purpose of higher education. I wonder if those sorts of things can act as an inspiration for...
Well, indeed, I mean, I've spent 9 years at a Scottish, an ancient Scottish university, where we have still the commitment to the Scottish education model of 2 years of general liberal education before you specialise in honours in years 3 and 4. That goes back to, as you say, the 17th and 18th century Scottish moralists. There is a huge amount of things to value in the medieval public university. I'm just saying that that public university is gone, irretrievably gone. It's an expirate. But that there is a threat to the universities if all we reduce their value to is the financial bottom line, profit and loss, strap lines, market differentiation, unique selling points. We lose so much. And I'm saying, look, let us, at this particular moment of degradation, let us recapture, let us recapture our sense of public ethical responsibility. Because I do think that some public universities did have that ethical commitment. What I'm also arguing is that many practices of the ancient public university are medieval. Our structures are medieval. Our disciplines are medieval. And these structures produce professional silos. They produce disciplines that only speak to one another in a professional jargon. I'm saying that we need to dismantle those disciplinary silos. Subjects need to come from out of those bunkers, and at the same time, the university needs to dismantle the ivory tower and let us fully and completely engage locally and globally, but with the point, not just of garnering money to meet the financial bottom line, but with a point of trying to make a difference to ordinary people's lives.
John, every kind of journey starts with some existing steps that you've already made. So is there anything in the university that you can point to, even say this university or others around us, that you point to that say this is a kind of an exemplar of the kind of thing you would expect to see a whole lot more of? Because it couldn't be that there isn't already some.
Well, let me not talk about Queens.
Okay.
But let me talk about Newcastle, a place I'm very fond of. They gave me the honour of inviting me to deliver the third annual Lord Patton Lecture. And I gave a lecture on the theme of society as our vocation. Not science as our vocation, but society as our vocation. And one of the reasons why they invited me was because they have already reconfigured their research landscape. They have three global institutes that deal with three particular global challenges, one of which is social renewal, another one of which is an ageing population, and I can't think of the third. But there's an example of how, incidentally, that the vice-chancellor of that university, in his former post, was vice-chancellor of the University of Stellenbosch at the time of South Africa's transition from apartheid to a democratic state. And I think that there's actually something quite relevant in that. That is to say, I think if a vice chancellor is to shift the culture of a university, to engage with what it takes to reconfigure that university's landscape, then there has to be some biographical motivation. There has to be some biographical referent. And Newcastle found it in the experience of their VC in trying to lead one of the major institutions through a key process of democratic transition. I think that with this motivation, with this drive, we are beginning to see in some universities the practice of fidelity, the recognition of ethical responsibility. Not just straplines, not just PR statements, not just brand differentiation, but talk about global challenges, talk about making people's lives better, talking about making a difference. And that's what I mean by fidelity. So Newcastle represents a good example.
Professor Brewer, I really enjoyed your talk. I'm a student from the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see a lot of parallels with a lot of the arguments you made with the universities in the United States. And a lot of this business culture, I think it's a lot worse where I'm from. But what I'm really curious about is, where do the students play out in all this? You know, what can the students do to get more involved in these initiatives? Or is it just something that the students are just left out of this picture altogether?
Absolutely not. I mean, but you are right. If I can mention that quip, the US catches a cold and Europe catches pneumonia. That is to say, America gets it first, we get it worse. And the neoliberalization, the marketization of higher education first began in the US. And the US is the worst example of a neoliberalized, marketized, administrative university. But Britain is pretty quickly catching up. But where are the students? The students are key. I kept on emphasizing not just reshaping the research landscape, but reshaping the teaching landscape. Because we have to generate in our students, I've called it elsewhere, a sympathetic imagination. We have to generate students who are committed to global citizenship, who have a sympathetic imagination towards the distant suffering of the marginalized other. And if we do not change minds, if all we do is simply train minds, then we are not fulfilling our moral purpose. We have to change minds. And one of the most important things, I think, is that we need to have... the lecture tutorial format is dead. I could have given a whole lecture on that if I'd wanted to. The lecture tutorial format is dead. It is a medieval way of teaching, where you profess at the front. Now, you no longer have chalk and a blackboard, you might have the latest gizmo, but you're still professing from the front in a very passive kind of way. It is precisely the wrong way to teach. If you want to change minds, if you want to inculcate a sense of sympathetic imagination, as I call it, you have got to show how what they are studying is life-enhancing and life-transforming. They have to experience, I'm going to say that again, they have to experience the life-changing nature of their curriculum. And if all you do is, for an hour, bring out your brown manila, you dust off 10 years old lecture notes and you just read, or you read your damn PowerPoints as if they can't read. I mean, you're not showing that the curriculum can be life enhancing and life changing. So students have to be at the heart of any reconfiguration. So that's why I keep on emphasising. We have to transform and reconfigure the teaching landscape as much as the research landscape. We have to end disciplinary silos in which what students are given is just a professional knowledge in a professional language that makes them incapable of speaking to ordinary people in ways that ordinary people can understand.
Thank you very much for the lecture, really enjoyed it, and thank you for your question, it was really interesting. I was just wondering, what would you say to a young person nowadays who might go, don't think university is for me, I'm not going to get a job. And I was thinking, we want more people to go to university because we need to have the people here, we need to make them profitable in some way. But to encourage that public funding, we need to have the people here. How are you going to get those young people to still decide, yeah, this is what I want to do?
Well, neoliberalism has created a global economy in which coming to university is an alternative to the dollar. This has created a student body that not only unexperienced levels of debt, it's produced as a student body that's highly instrumental. Coming to university is a means to get a job. And that is the wrong way to look at going to university. Now, I have to say that universities encourage this misapprehension. Universities want to be places where students think, where they read widely, where they are inculcated into certain ways of thinking, certain ways of seeing, inculcated into, as I call it, a sympathetic imagination. But sadly, you get some students who are here, what can I do to get a 2-1? Because I need a 2-1 to get a good job. Now, the marketized administrative university encourages that attitude. It encourages students to see themselves as customers bearing a fee who deserve certain sorts of things because they carry money. Now, I think that if we reshape the moral purpose of a university, we reconfigure the relationship that teaching has within the university, and we reshape the relationship between a student and staff. And I am completely committed to the idea that we should be educating global citizens for life in the 21st century, not narrow professional minds who only want to do one because that's what they think gets them a good job. So let me illustrate what I mean by that. When I was in the University of Aberdeen, I had a course that I called the Sociology of Peace Processes. It was an undergraduate course for 4 years. These are people who've been through 2 years of a general education, the liberal arts, but who need to then specialise in. Now, the point about an undergraduate course on the sociology of peace process is to try to garner a sympathetic imagination to places in the global south where there's suffering, where there's need, and where there's want. Now, I didn't do the lecture tutorial format in order to try to inculcate that sympathetic imagination, to try to turn them into global citizens. So I gave them my lecture notes beforehand, and we then just had a seminar format. And I would, and the modern marketized neoliberal university, you get large student groups. The tutorials disappeared. And so I would break them into bus groups, led by one of the students.
and I would flit between the buzzwords. I tried to eliminate the gulf between the real world and the classroom by bringing in people from civil society. I had role plays in which the students would, some students would act out the role of a victim, other students would act out the role of a perpetrator, and we'd say, well, let them experience what it's like in a post-conflict setting to try to balance the different needs of victims and perpetrators. You have to change your model of teaching, because quite frankly the lecture tutorial format is medieval. It's gone. It doesn't affect us for the 21st century. We have to have teaching methods that equip students to experience the life-enhancing and life-changing nature of their degree. Probably better than yours.
If there's no more final questions, I'm sure we might as well thank John once again and to enjoy the remainder of the sandwiches and the coffee now.